Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us now. On to international stories, and lots has actually been happening over the past week. And we've asked Director at Risk Recon and former diplomat, Dr. Kingsley Makubela, to help us really unpack some of the biggest stories that we've been watching unfold over the past week. Dr. Makubela, thank you so much for your time again. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela. Thanks very much for the invitation.
Gosh, a lot has happened since we last spoke. There were talks between Russia and Trump. There seems to be some sort of an understanding between Russia and Ukraine agreeing that they can exchange prisoners of war. However, the last time this happened, it didn't stop Russia from continuing bombing. What do you make of this agreement this time around?
Pamela, since yesterday, a major escalation has been taking place.
Yeah.
Ukraine bombed a few military bases and are taking strategic bombers in Federation in an operation that Zelensky says it has taken 1 year, 6 months to plan. It's a major, major escalation because some of those nuclear bombers, in terms of the treaties, they are supposed to be outside and visible to satellite images because there's the arrangement between the United States and Russian Federation. We are expecting between today and perhaps before the end of this week a major attack on Kiev. And Putin has just said that diplomacy has failed. He said the Ukraine has crossed the red line, so there's no red line. So that's a major escalation that is taking place. But as this escalation was taking place, Pimelo, there was a meeting today in Istanbul between Ukraine and the Russian Federation delegation, a very somber meeting in a way, but they managed to map up what they needed to do. The focus is still on the release of political prisoners, captives that they respectively have. They have released the others 2 weeks ago. And ironically, the ones that were released by Ukraine consisted of a lot of civilians instead of prisoners of war. So they have agreed to release that. But they've exchanged conditions. Mm. And if you look at those documents that they've exchanged that are circulating already on the wide web, it indicates some level of intractability, that they are unlikely to reach an agreement. Mm. And given the escalation that has just taken place yesterday, we are all afraid. We're crossing our fingers. The United States administration hasn't said anything about this specific escalation. There's been a discussion between Lavrov and and Marco Rubio. We don't know what transpired, but that's where the challenge is now.
You know, Europe usually is quite slow on these things, but at the moment I think everybody's a little bit jittery about how to intervene now at this point, because this can escalate, as Russia has said. You know, he has no problem bringing it on and taking it right into Europe itself.
Pinello, the horse has bolted now, I think. Last week, you may have seen Chancellor Merz saying that Germany is going to outsource the production of long-range and export long-range missiles into Ukraine. And the Russians said that's another red line. They would bomb the factory where these missiles are produced.
Yeah.
And because of this rhetoric that has been going on, a few weeks ago, the New York Times published in an article that all the attacks that are happening in Russia are conducted from a German town called Visbek by General Kovely, and that decisions are actually made. And General Kovely is a U.S. general responsible for the U.S. fleet, and that whatever is going on there, decisions are made by Americans, not by Ukrainians. And this was published by the New York Times. So this comes at this heightened tension. Last week, you may have seen Russia arguing that Ukraine attempted to shoot down the plane, the helicopter of Vladimir Putin. Mm. So all these escalations are happening at a rather rapid pace. Today I've seen Starmer, the British Prime Minister, preparing the country for war. So there's heightened tension that is building up. With this tension, the Iranian discussions with the American on the nuclear thing seems also to be reaching a dead end. The American initially were demanding zero enrichment. Now they seem to be backtracking because the Iranians are going to dismiss that. So you're getting these tensions that are building up. There's a tension building up around Taiwan too, between the American. There was a meeting, the security meeting that took place last week, that raised a lot of tension. I mean, somebody just sent me a detailed document of the outcome of the meeting that I'll be reading throughout the night and sometimes tomorrow. Mm. So you can see there are heightened global tensions with a female. You could literally hear the needle dropping. Mm. And that's the fear that we are now, the situation we are in.
And I wanted to ask, you know, with all these pockets of tensions around the world happening, how far do you think this Ukraine, Russia, NATO, Europe, obviously, a conflict can go?
You know, the Americans are in Poland, for instance, a very conservative as one who's aligned to, is the president now, who's aligned to Donald Trump. The Americans are withdrawing some of their military forces in Poland. So there are a lot of pockets of tension that are happening, and what is not helping, we're not getting the leadership that strategically intervenes to try to lessen the tension. The rhetoric that we are hearing across the board, it's worrisome. We had two U.S. senators who were in Ukraine during the course of this weekend. They just left yesterday, beating up the war drums too. So you're seeing this tension, and the fear is that what happened yesterday may really plunge the world into a serious conflict, because the Russians are contemplating to use what they call the Oreshnik technical missile, which is a very lethal missile. They are saying it's equivalent to a nuclear bomb, even though it's not a nuclear bomb. Mm-hmm. It's so destructive that it can't be intercepted. So. And I've seen reports that the recommendation has been made to President Putin with selected targets. So he's the one who has to approve that. So the tension that is there, you could feel it. It can plunge the world into conflict. China is coming to say the Americans are the biggest threat to international peace, hands off Russia. So it's serious tension. We're living at the most dangerous time. I think much more dangerous than the Cold War, because during the Cold War, there were predictable approaches or situations that were in place. Now, they are not there. I know the CIA director and the director of the Russian Foreign Intelligence, they were scheduled to meet even this attack happened. Now, I hope they will continue to meet to try to bring the situation down. But there are reports also. Exxon issued out the report yesterday saying that the Americans were forewarned about this attack by Ukraine, and later on retracted the report and say, no, it was a mistake. But the damage is already done. The perception is done. Yeah. So that rapprochement that we've been seeing between Russia in the United States, I think it has been seriously affected.
Ukraine is not going to come out as a winner on this one. And I wonder, you know, what would you then suggest they do at this point? Because they, in my view, sort of casualties of, they're the casualty here between really two big bulls, being Russia and NATO. They're not going to come out winners on this one. What do you suggest they do?
You know, military analysts across the board, even from the West, they are starting to prepare for eventual terms and conditions of Ukraine's capitulation, given what happened yesterday. Mm. They are of the view that it's untenable now. And we've been crossing our fingers about today's meeting that it won't proceed. But we don't know why would the meeting proceed, and this side countries are preparing for major conflict. So Ukraine will come up the loser out of this thing. They have no capacity. Mm. I think there's pressure even from Western countries to say, you're not going to do that. In France, there's been pressure against Macron to say, you're not going to send arms to Ukraine. So it's creating a huge problem. And people are starting to ask similar questions, Pimelo, you recall, that is the price of Ukraine worth the Third World War? And that question is being pronounced very loudly now.
So let's move on to what's happening in Israel. And we know that the restriction of aid coming through has been a biggest talking point over the past couple of days. And some think tanks are really, really upset about the fact that the former U.S. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller has waited until he was out of office to finally admit, and he did that on Sky News, that Israel committed war crimes in Gaza. And you're starting to hear more and more of this coming through. Does it matter?
You know, Pimela, there's been serious voices about the war crime, most ostensibly coming from also Ehud Olmert, the former Prime Minister, who said what Israel is doing in Gaza, it's tantamount to war crime.
Yeah.
And really condemning the Prime Minister around this scene. There's a group of 553 former officers, that includes Mossad, former officers of Mossad, Shin Bin, and Defense, who are saying what is going on there is unacceptable. So there's a pendulum shift. Spain, I saw on some news earlier today, Spain is joining South Africa on the genocide case against Israel. So the pendulum is really shifting, and it's creating a huge problem for the Israelis. Last week, the Chinese have forcefully airdropped food in Gaza, and they send their own jets to protect their plane. So essentially getting Israel to dare shoot our plane. Israel attempted to shoot it, but I think they deliberately avoided to do that, to avoid this escalation. So these are spots of serious tension, because can you imagine if the Israelis were to shoot down a Chinese jet, the retaliation that you'd expect from the Chinese and the American involvement and everyone dragged into this thing. So these tensions, I'm saying, you feel them. And every day, you know, we all wake up to check exactly what's going on. I was trying to speak to some of my good friends around the world to see what is their reading of the situation. Kimala, I can tell everyone is so tense about the possibility of a Third World War just breaking up like that.
And you know, there was a time when this was just such a, you throw the word Third World War as a joke, but this is the moment when it could actually happen.
It's quite scary now. It can happen at any time because of this tensions that are building up. I mean, you've seen also in the Black Sea last week, Moldova and so on preventing certain ships from accessing Russia, and the Russians sending their military there, and all of a sudden the British are sending their military to Moldova or to the Baltic states to beef up defense there. But it's a huge escalation. It's unprecedented. Even during the Cold War, we've never seen this kind of movement of troops and so on. Poland and the Czech Republic are digging trenches along the borders with Russia. They're removing some of their citizens and so on. So there's generally a war psychosis that is prevailing around. People are preparing for war and so on. And it's a huge problem. It reminded me of Bob Marley's song, Rumors of the War. Mm. You know, all over you're seeing this thing building up.
I want us to, and I know that I've asked you that we can touch on this next week, but I mean, while all of this is happening, our own continent is not still at all. You know, you see what's happening in Sudan, and it's almost like nothing is happening, but so much is going on there. In the Sahel, you see what is also happening in the DRC. Lots of movement in the DRC as well, especially over the past week.
You know, in the Sudan, the Prime Minister who was sworn in on Saturday, he set up a government, dissolved the government yesterday. And there's been major escalation too between the Rapid Deployment Force and the Sudan Defense Force. They've attacked certain bases of the Rapid Deployment Force. So you're seeing this escalation and happening there. It's also concerning, but you don't see the level of attention that is attached to the Sudan as compared to what is going on in the Ukraine. And it tells you about the biasness of the developed world in terms of those wars, that the wars that are happening in Africa, there's less attention.
Mm-hmm.
Not least even by African Pumelo. There's no attention that is paid to try to find a solution about what's going on in the Sudan, the starvation, the massacre that have been happening in the last few days in the Sudan.
Yeah.
It is shocking, and nothing is happening. No voices, nothing.
No, absolutely. We don't even see images of what is happening in the Sudan, and people are starving there as well. And the re-entry of Kabila into the DRC, quite openly, publicly so, in the DRC's politics, for me, quite remarkable.
You know, Kabila left, you know, he's been staying out of the country for quite some time. And when he went to Goma a few weeks ago and started to interact with the M23, the parliament in Kinshasa voted to remove his immunities from prosecution. So you're seeing tension building up around that. It's not time for the DRC to start identifying enemies at this time. At this time, it's the time to bring everyone together to try to resolve the conflict. And I think this tension that is building up there is not being helpful. It's not being helpful also because our troops are still there. There have been reports that the movement of our troops to Tanzania, to the assembly point, has been frustrated by the demands. And sometimes I hear that the Rwandists wanted them to be disarmed as they moved into Rwanda. But you ask yourself, why would they need arms into Rwanda if Rwanda provides them with absolute protection? We don't know some of those details, so we get into this thing superficially. But if they provide some level of protection for the movement of the troops through there to Tanzania, it's something that we should. And I think Kabila would play a much more important role in facilitating this movement of our troops. But the information against Pumelo is that we're not getting feedback about what's the status, what's going on exactly with our troops, those who are injured, their logistics, what's happening.
So what's your take and your reading of Kabila so publicly, and I would call it daring, you know, coming in publicly declaring himself back in the fold, especially after his immunity from prosecution has been removed? What do you think? I mean, he's still young. Do you think he formally wants to re-enter politics there?
Well, he's in terms of the current arrangement, he's barred from continuing to run.
Yeah.
But you know, the DRC is very much divided along ethnic lines. So this ethnicity plays a much more crucial role. You may find that behind the scene, there's pressure for Kabila to intervene and try to calm the situation from his own tribe and so on. So these are the issues that really needs to be managed and nuanced with utmost care, because if we keep on exacerbating the ethnic tension in the DRC, it's going to compound the already problem that is going there. But I only hope that because Kabila understands some of the agreements that were previously reached, that he will be able to assist in the implementation. And I hope the current government don't see him as somebody who's a recalcitrant individual, but somebody who can contribute to the resolution of the conflict, because he has the institutional memory and knowledge about where things went bad and how things can be repaired. And I think they should harness that and bring him into the fold.
But I mean, you know, removing his immunity from prosecution should tell us a lot about what they think of
him. It tells a lot.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying you've seen President Tshisekedi, an uncompromising approach, not only to Kabila, even to the M23 and other groups that are operating in the DRC. He's behaving as if he has the power to really defeat them, and yet he can't defeat them. There's some level of a stalemate, but the conflict will continue. And people who would suffer most are ordinary people who would bear the brunt of the conflict. So there's no strategic leadership, I'm afraid, from the government to try to reach out and really come up with some rapprochement with even Kabila and other factions leaders who are very important, who can play an instrumental role in really bringing the situation to some level of calm, particularly on both the north and the south Kivu area. And the tension that is building up now in Kisangani, it has been building for quite some time. And that tension will spill over also to areas like Lubumbashi and so on that have been relatively quiet for now.
Dr. Makubela, thank you. Thank you so much for your take. Thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to our next conversation. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Pimelo.
Thank you. Director at Risk Recon and former diplomat, Dr. Kingsley Makubela.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.